Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode once a week. I went a little bit longer this time because the K1 event ended early Sunday morning for me. So I want to make sure people had enough time to watch it. That's why I didn't record on Sunday. I didn't want to, you know, do a show that was pretty much all spoilers. But I usually upload a show once a week. And then the other very efficient way to get the show is by entering Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine, and my show pops right up. So not going to be a long episode today. I'm actually on location. I love to say on location, even though it has no relevance whatsoever to what I'm doing as far as the recording goes. I'm in New York. My fighter, Alice Yager, is on the Bellator card tomorrow in Madison Square Garden. So having a lot of fun just sitting here waiting for the second weigh-in. And I was like, you know what? Be a great time to get that kickboxing podcast to the people, especially with a bunch of MMA, boxing, and kickboxing going on all weekend. Figured I'd get it to you guys right now. Just a short episode. Just going to talk about a couple of results and get you guys your kickboxing fix. First of all, I want to talk about Glory. They posted something that announced their plans for the second half of the year as far as what they're going to do with their title picture. So as it stands, Robin van Roosmalen will be going against Adamchuk, which is what we found out at the last event. Adamchuk actually said he was a little surprised that he was getting the title shot, but coming off the big victory over Dylan Salvador, which I still feel is, you know, his best win to date, I'm happy he's getting this opportunity. And we've got Sitichai. He's going to go against Christian Baia. Baia, of course, has been, you know, winning. He won the tournament. No, people were not the biggest fan of the, you know, the final fight because, you know, teammate versus teammate, Glender and him. But in the end, you know, Baia won the four-man tournament. Both of them had good showings in the earlier fight. Baia, of course, has also got the win over Jonsi. So, you know, definitely cool that he's in an opportunity. Sitichai, of course, the man sitting atop that division. Next, we've got some people. I guess some people thought that there's a good chance that there'd be a, you know, Murat Grigoryan, but as Grigoryan's already fought him, that's why I think nobody has a problem with it being Baia. Cedric Doumbé is going to go against Mirko Grunhart. They're going to do it again. They did it last year, but there wasn't a five rounder, and Grunhart admits that he fought more with heart more with aggression than his head. You know, he's definitely looking to bang, to land something bit to get Doumbé in trouble. And Doumbé just kind of played his point score, combo flow, and get out of there kind of movement. And he's not running. Cedric Doumbé does not run. He just finds tactical moments to put his combinations and kicks together, and then he moves. But he doesn't run. He's very, very tactical. He knows what he's doing in there. So him and Grunhart will do it again. Bulgari will be taking on Simon Marcus. That'll be interesting. You know, Bulgari, of course, very, very tall for the weight class. It should be interesting to see how that goes. Marcus, powerhouse, very, very strong. His fight with Wilnes was a freaking war, a grueling, grueling fight where both guys got hit a lot. We'll see what happens in this next outing. Then we got Machado versus Vakadov. Machado, of course, is the mover. He's going to score and go. Vakadov, of course, is one of the more complete kickboxers on the planet, very skilled guy. And then Rico Verhoeven will go against Ben Sadiq, something that we've known was going to happen for a while, even though Sadiq hasn't had a tournament. He got the win over Ismael Lant. Since that win, a lot of people expected that he'd get this opportunity. So that's what it's looking like for the title picture for Glory. They posted something. Basically, it says Glory title challengers, who will be next Glory champion, and they've been, you know, posting it and sending it all over. So they haven't decided how it's going to allocate on the cards yet, but that's pretty much what it's looking like. And again, that wasn't a fight breakdown. That was just me telling you guys what's coming and who got what opportunities, and it's definitely something interesting. It's good on Glory, too, because the earlier you do things, the better it is. You know, you can build hype behind it. You can get people into it. So early is good in this game. So we'll go ahead and talk mainly. The bulk of this show will be about what happens or what's going down in the world of K1. They've got several announcements along with their fight card. So I'll go ahead and get into some of the announcement parts. They have already mentioned what was going to be their next tournament field. I won't go into that or whatever. It's got a lot of familiar names for the next tournament. But the biggest news, the unchallenged biggest news, is the K1 World Grand Prix Japan on the 23rd of November is bringing back the heavyweight division. It's not even funny how huge that is. This is a sport that everybody thought was done when they lost the K1 World Grand Prix. When it went away in 2011 was the year that they didn't have it. When it went away, that's when people thought that was the end of kickboxing. So for K1 to focus on building up local stars, for them to focus on the Japanese market television-wise, for them to still bring in international product, skilled guys here and there, but for them to change their whole landscape and how they do everything, for that focus to happen, and then for them to spend a couple years doing it slow, moving to a bigger arena, moving to Saitama after doing Kyokushin Hall, like for them to patiently find their moment, build stars, and then say, okay, we're going to bring back, this would have been their max division. It was about 70 kgs. They call it super welterweight. For them to bring that back, have success with that, and then to announce the plan that they're bringing back the heavyweight division, it's just amazing. There isn't a heavyweight in the world, and I'm telling you, the entire Glory roster, Rigo Vahirvan included, who heard the news about K1's heavyweight division and said it to themselves, I want to be in that. It's got the history. It's got the legends. It is something else. So when that came up, when those people sat around and said, how are we going to put this together? And the ratings grew and the athletes got better. For them to finally get back to bringing in the heavyweight division means that they've got, and again, there's still that big gap. They still have 54 and then there's a big gap above it, and then we got heavyweight. But it shows the strength and the great job that they've been doing with the K1 Japan group. That shows the great job that they've been doing to get the sport back on track, to get butts back in the seat, to get themselves on TV, to build stars. They're doing it right. And bringing back the heavyweights is just a sign of that. So shout out to them. We're going to go ahead and get into, of course, what made them, and that is good high-level kickboxing action. And we had it all. Not only did we have it all, but man, did we get some really great intros and people really selling themselves. It was a great event, and I'll do my best to not just talk about the fight, but just talk about the event and the feel of it. So, undercard, of course, I'm just going to mention these kind of quickly. Takuma Kawaguchi gets a victory by unanimous decision over Nishikyo. The only name that I think I'll struggle with, Nishikyo. Suzuki Hayato gets a victory over Koga Yuki. Now, this victory, it was a big-time right hand, I want to say, in that one. Good stuff there for Hayato. Teoki Yuki gets a victory over Tabata Ryu. That was a 31-second smash job, just kind of random overland, big offense early, and that was it. And then I think we've got one more fight. Jinbo Katsuya gets a victory, KO victory, over Yuchiyama Masato at 2 minutes and 21 seconds. The reason why I bring this up, these are the undercard bouts. They are the openers, barely any people in the audience. We had 3 stoppages in the first 4 fights, and that just told me I'm going to have a great night. Just having those stoppages told me all I needed to know about how the rest of this night was going to go. Go ahead and hop into the tournament field. The only ho-hum fight I felt of the card, for me personally, was just the of the main card, was the Yoichi Yamazaki versus Tamiaki Makino fight, because it was a unanimous decision. I just felt like Yamazaki would always just do a little bit better in every round. I never thought that either guy got into their flow. I thought that, early I was like, Yamazaki needs to stop with all that, stop spinning. Stop doing your spinning back fist. Just get to clean kickboxing. And he was able to get to it and have some sustainable moments and have some success. So credit due for him. He gets the victory, but he was not needed in this tournament because it was awesome and violent without him. Yoshihiro Kido, first of all, put on one of the better performances that I've ever seen from a fighter. He is... He did such a great job of selling himself. Well, you know what? I'll go ahead and break the tournament down as I saw it on TV. I won't talk about there. I was kind of going up the list that I have here. I will break this card down as it was played for me on TV. So first we had Jordan Piquet get the victory over Hinata Watanabe. And the big thing with Jordan Piquet is just the strength. You've got to be able to handle the physical strength of him because he's so strong for the weight class. You can outscore him. He's a hittable guy. But he's so strong for the weight class that he'll be able to walk you down, throw punches and bunches, and land good offense. He kicks here and there, but mainly he gets you with his aggression, his boxing, and then he'll do something explosive here and there. Hinata actually did a good job of scoring, you know, clean kickboxing. And you could really make the argument that in the third round, he was on his way to probably winning a, you know, a decision. I thought he's doing good in the round. And then all of a sudden, Jordan Piquet, you know, fires a jumping knee and it hits Hinata and Hinata goes down. And in a fight that he was definitely working his way back into, that was the difference on the scorecard, you know, for sure. I think Piquet ended up winning, you know, I think there was one 10-10 card, but I still think that the judges gave him the majority of the rounds because he was so strong. And Hinata was scoring. He just couldn't keep Piquet off of him. Just, you know, Jordan's just too strong. He was able to walk him down, get the victory. Next fight in the card was Chingiz Alzov as he went against Hiroki Nakajima. Stops him in the, you know, second round. And from the beginning, you could see that the more skilled guy is Chingiz Alzov. As I said before, this guy can give it to you however you want. He'll switch stance. He can beat you with his jab with both hands. He's got a fiery hook. He can score offense and turn angles. He can play combination of low kick. He has a great kick return. So if you kick him, he'll kick you right back super fast. Sometimes he sets up a double kick by firing to your body, letting you play the kick counter, and then he'll counter that. So he'll go first and he'll go last, as I always say. So he does a great job of getting up on the cards. But the way Hiroki was fighting, I was like, you know, maybe he'll be able to stay tight enough to not give up the big shot. And then he gave up the big shot. You know, Nakajima goes down. He gets back up to his feet, tries to fight on. But Alzov, very, very wise, doesn't jump on him. Doesn't jump on him. Doesn't throw, you know, super haymakers to try, in a rush to try to get the second down. Because, you know, sometimes you see that in tournaments where in the early portion of it, rounds one and rounds two, the quarterfinals and the semis, the rules are usually two downs. If you get two downs in one round, you lose. So some guys, after they get the first down, they're in a hurry to get the second one. Alzov was not in a hurry. Came out, looked for clean boxing, looked to set up his head kick. Then all of a sudden, he throws a right knee. And then once he brings the right knee back, the moment he sets it on the ground, he shoots a lead uppercut with his left hand, goes right through the guard, and KO. KO victory, clean Nakajima out. Very, very awesome stuff for Alzov, who, again, the moment this it was announced that he was in the tournament, I picked him to win it. A lot of people picked him to win it because he was a skilled guy who just, for whatever reason, wasn't picked up by any of the big organizations for a really long time. He floated around there. Glory didn't get him. K1 finally snatched him up. And after one showing, it showed to the world, this guy's legit. We move on to the next fight in the card. Sonny Dalbec comes out and gets a victory over Yo Hirano. This victory was pretty much Sonny Dalbec came out. You know, plays how Sonny likes to play with combos, and he likes to move. He can play the counter, but he does a really good job of scoring sneaky offense. The difference in this one was he threw a jumping knee out of nowhere, and it caused a cut over Hirono's eye. Outside of that, and this is a fight that I thought he was going to blow Hirono out, Hirono was game. He fought so hard, they kept stopping the fight because of the cuts. But he was throwing combinations. He was walking, you know, Dalbec down. It was clear that he wasn't going to go down from a punch. He looked determined to get in exchanges, determined to close the distance. And I thought Dalbec was still scoring. Like, I still thought he was scoring clean, savvy counters, combinations and kicks. I thought that he was doing a good job of scoring. I just thought Yo Hirono was fighting in such a way with his pressure that there was a really good chance that he could have swayed some of the scorecards if he could have got to the scorecard, but he couldn't get to it. He was just working through the cut to the best of his ability, and then a big shot would land, and then it would just get worse and worse, and then finally they stopped the fight. Game, awesome effort by Yo Hirono. I don't know if I give sometimes when someone gives professional resistance, I worry that I don't give them their due as much. This time, I for sure feel confident that I gave him their due. Like, I for sure feel confident that I was going to focus on Hirono's effort in a loss because I thought that he did a great job of really working hard. So good job there for Hirono. And then Sonny Dalbec, I really think that he came to, you know, fight, plays the counters, good low kick game, good body kick game. And his entrance was on point. I'm telling you, you guys, when he comes to the, to the ring with the Sonny song, you know, I can't think of the original title, but like, it sets it up. He's been using the song for a really long time, but it's just a great, great scene to watch him come. Great work. Speaking of great work, Yoshihiro Kido, before he goes out and fights Luke Whalen, he has what could only be described as a short film where it's a story about him at a gym and his trainer, and it's absolutely hilarious. So after you watch this short film for like 3 minutes, they finally get to him to the fight. And Luke Whalen, who is a replacement for Jordan Watson, who broke his foot, Luke Whalen came out game, looking to throw, looking to exchange. But Kido was patient. He was working good offense throughout. First, he did a good job of attacking the back rear low kick. Started scoring well with the boxing. And then I saw at the moment it landed, he had scored some shots to the body of Whalen earlier in the fight, but Whalen battled through it. But he went to something that he hadn't used before in the fight. He went to a switch kick. As soon as that switch kick scored, I was like, that one hurt. The moment it scored, I was like, that one sucked. It's something similar when I was watching boxing the other day, and I posted it on my Twitter where I talked about how Kovalev had fell forward in a weird way, and the way that Andre Ward ripped to the body, I was like, dude, that one sucked. Like, you could just see it. When that switch kick came through, Whalen took it bad, but he was like, you know, bit down his mouthpiece, tried to fight back. Yoshihiro Kido came back with another switch kick moments later, got him in trouble, put a flurry together, and was able to score a body KO in the second round. And I really thought that, excuse me, could have been the third, but I really thought that Yoshihiro Kido, yeah, it was for sure in the third. I'm going to remember right now. He for sure got that stoppage in the third. So I thought that Kido did a really good job of bringing in the fight. Again, he had a guy on short notice, the body rip. I just thought it was complete work. The combos, the finding the back rear leg, to finding the body punches, to finding the switch kick. It was complete work by Kido, and that got us through the first round. Then we go into some super fight action. Ren Hiromoto gets a victory over Umar Pashiev. 30-26 in all cards. I believe he scored it down, I want to say, in the first round. Ren isn't bad, but he's no Tension. You know, Tension is the truth. Like, that kid, that 18-year-old, is a star who is stopping elite guys who people think will be a, you know, champion for a long time. He's going to be one of the greats from Japan for sure. So we don't have that, but we do have a solid fighter. I was disappointed because I thought Ren Hiromoto couldn't be hurt by Omar Pashiev, who was clearly fighting in a way after a while to just get to the cards. But I thought that Ren could have been a lot more offensively aggressive. You know, I thought that he could have turned it up a little bit more. I wanted to see more mean from him, and I didn't see it. He got the victory, but he's young, 18 years old. He'll grow, and it doesn't mean that he won't be awesome down the road or be better down the road, but he's not showing the potential that Tension shows so early, you know, or in his career. But still very good win for Ren, and we'll see what they bring him out with next. This is the good kind of fight for him because I think even they know it's going to take some development not to rush this thing. So good for him. Hiromu Saikyo gets a victory over Kato Ozawa. This is another, you know, ho-hum victory. There was some good stuff, some good combo flow, some good offensive scores. But in the end, Saikyo was just a better fighter, wins all the rounds. I think maybe one judge had an even round. But nothing special from either guy. Of course, the disappointing thing for me was Ozawa, who once competed with Takeru for the king of the division, or one of the young stars in the division. I thought maybe he came out, I don't want to say too emotional, but maybe looking for a big shot early. Whereas I thought Hiromu from the beginning, Saikyo from the beginning, was scoring clean combinations, working well. I believe he scored a down in the first. I can't remember what it was from, but I know there's a down scored in the first round. And you know, Ozawa was, oh, I remember it now. They were in an exchange, and the reason why I don't remember it or I didn't say it right off the bat was because Ozawa's glove didn't touch. He got hit good, and there was a small hesitation there, and they stepped in. But in the replay, he just looked like he stumbled towards his, you know, like he was going to fall on his butt, and then he regained his poise. I thought that, but still, it still was a, on the cards, it should have read as a 10-8 round, because I still thought that, you know, Sekio was winning before it. After that, Ozawa never put together enough consistent offense to get into the fight, whereas Sekio did a great job of consistently beating him out in every round, consistently more combos, consistently more kicks, both in combos and in singles. I just thought that he was the better fighter throughout. I said it was ho-hum and forgettable because of Ozawa's effort into the fight. I didn't think was what he's shown me in the past. He's definitely showed me much better. But I think that this was a good win for Sekio, and who knows where it leads. Maybe it leads towards Takeru. We'll see. Tega gets a victory over Koji. Tega was all over the place in the beginning. For about the first 90 seconds, I was like, all right, slow it down. Tega's wild. Not anything clean. He slowed it down. He started working a good rear leg kick. Started working, you know, good clean boxing. And then it became clear that Koji couldn't score consistent offense on him. Tega goes out there, continues his consistency streak, beating people with his. He's got so much superior athletic gifts that I thought were lost when he was trying to win by flash. But we've got a different situation here. I mentioned it before. I talked about how Bogdan Stoica, once upon a time, I thought that he'd be the better between him and Andre Stoica. I thought he had more of a kill streak, and I thought if he could keep his combination flow going, he'd be special down the road. After the motorcycle accident, I thought since he's come back from there, he's just more focused on winning by KO. And I thought that he sacrificed winning rounds for jumping, you know, knees and spinning kicks and that kind of stuff, whatever, and he got away from clean kickboxing, whereas Andre Stoica continued to work clean kickboxing as he got better as a fighter throughout the years. So of those two, he was the more polished guy, and he has the more significant victories. Tega was on his way to being a guy who just did a bunch of jumping knees and didn't develop consistency. But since, you know, winning the title against, you know, Urube, it was a really good showing in terms of his last three or four fights have been clean kickboxing, winning rounds, better defense, better movement. He's showing the skills. He's putting the talent together. He did a really, really good job. So shout out to him, and I definitely wish him more success down the road. Keep it up. You've got something. You've found something. We return to the tournament field. Yoshihiro Kido beats Sonny Dalback by one of the more brutal low kicks you're ever going to see. You know, it just the way it landed, it came right across the front of the leg. And I thought that his knee buckled until I asked Sonny Dalback about it. He says, no, he just kicks really, really hard. He scored a good low kick early, Kido did, you know, and then he built on it with a really strong one that bent the leg weird. And Dalback was in trouble. Kido was able to finish it with low kicks. Great job. And, of course, in tournaments, winning by stoppage always helps. So you got a guy in Sonny, you know, in Yoshihiro Kido, two fights, two stoppages. Chingiz Alzov then goes out there and scores the meanest left hook. One shot, you know, one hit a quitter, as they say. PKA went down. Well, the shot landed clean. Jordan will be fine. He'll be back. He's a tough guy. He's good to use on cards. He's still the champion for Crush, I believe. He's still doing his thing, but I just thought he ran into a superior kickboxer who I thought that, okay, his best chance is if he bites down on the mouthpiece, gets close, and gets into exchanges, gets the opportunity to land the big shots. But Alzov was game with his movement to keep those offensive flurries from happening. He kept finding good spots to set up his own personal offense, and then he would land something big that would get, PK, you know, get PK's attention. But when the left hook scored, that was it. He went down, out cold. Big-time win for Alzov, who then moved on to the final. Then they brought out the man. I guess I'll talk about him. I'll talk about him now. Takeru, you know, just one of the big stars in kickboxing who brings it all the time. He's got the entrance. He's got the backflip off the ropes after he wins. He goes out there and does what he does. One of the most entertaining guys in all of kickboxing. For a guy who weighs less than 130 pounds, you know, so a guy who weighs less than, you know, 60 kgs, he goes out there and just puts on an awesome performance on a consistent basis. And he gets the other, you know, Pereshchev, Bavazar Pereshchev, and he goes out there, and after maybe you can say that Pereshchev had some moments in the first round. I still gave Tekeru every round until the stoppage, but just there was a mean streak that came over him. He got tired. Like, I think Pereshchev had moments where he was, like, trying to, you know, tap gloves and you know, was having weird moments off of exchanges and trying to hold and get out of the round. Like, I saw that. His brother did that as well. Tekeru wasn't having it. Started pushing him away, started land big offense, scored a shot to the body that got Pereshchev in trouble. He went down once, and then the second time he went down, that was it. Tekeru, he brings it. Like, he's just all action. He is one of the most important kickboxing stars in the world. I would say not since Masato has there been a gravitation towards a Japanese athlete in the country. As far as kickboxing goes, he has that kind of potential. If he can keep winning, keep stopping guys, he'll continue to grow. Now, again, he's more kickboxing focused, unlike, you know, Tenshin, for example, who does MMA as well. Not saying that Tekeru can't do it, but I'm saying right now he's the man in kickboxing. They do a great job of promoting him. They do a great job of getting him out there, and he gets those W's. And not just get those W's, but he gets those stoppages, and that's huge in the sport. Wei Ru puts on an awesome performance as he gets a victory over Gunapar. I did think that in the last round, Gunapar was determined to bite down on the mouthpiece and just throw. Like, he was determined to banging out with them. Like, he was like, okay, I can't beat this guy in kickboxing. As slick as I am as a Thai, this guy is more slick as a southpaw Chinese fighter who kept scoring with the boxing, kept scoring with the kicks and the movement. But Gunapar would just bite down and just stay in there. And Wei Ru, as far as offense goes, whatever he threw was landing. If you threw the boxing, it would land. If you threw a knee, it would land. If you threw a kick, it would land. But Gunapar was just so determined that I'm going to be the kind of guy to bang it out. And in the third round, it looked like he finally was going to have his moments. It was not meant to be. Two of the cards, 29-27, and another one, 29-28, were in favor of Wei Ru, who got more work. He is the champion of the division, of course. A fight with Koya Arobe is probably coming down the road. But great job for him, and great job for Japan, who, you know, K1 pretty much had a title fight with a Thai fighter and a Chinese fighter. It just shows the growth of their brand and what they're doing and who they're trying to put out. They could have grabbed, you know, this could have been Arobe. This could have been Koya Arobe's spot. But they gave it to Gunapar, and he brought the kind of offense that makes people remember you and want to see you again. So great job there. Definitely, it was a lot of fun. I was really, really pleased with how this fight played out. Masaki Nori is your new champion. Izzy beats Ku. It was an extra round split decision, two for Nori, one for Ku. After the first round, there was two a draw, and then one for Ku, our cow. I've heard cow as well. Now there's going to be some controversy over this, but you've come to the wrong man, because when Masaki Nori was 15 years old, I was like, this kid's going to be the best in the world. This kid's going to be a champ one day. And that was before K1 even had a consistent division for him. At the time, they were just flirting with that 63.5 kg division and so on. So now, with their weight class being around 143 pounds, something like that, Masaki Nori goes against the best. He lost to him last time. Last time they fought, I thought that he had the defensive part down. He had the earmuffs on, but he just didn't score enough offense. This time, I noticed a couple of different strategies. Number one, he was able to hurt Ku's leg. Ku's lead leg, he attacked right away from the orthodox stance, and then he'd switch to the southpaw stance. He was able to score some consistent kicks there, and anytime they got into a clinch, he would just start healing away at it, throwing knees at it, like he was determined to make something happen. And meanwhile, Kyle was doing his job of scoring the boxing, scoring the step knees, filling space with offense, and then always throwing things strong and hard. The rounds were close early, but again, you will not get a rational argument from me. You know, like, I'll be the first one to tell you, there is some bias in how I do this. This is my show. I'm admitting guilt. I can be a little biased, especially if I predict someone to be the best in the world and they become the best in the world. Those cards are just agreeing with what I said years ago. So don't go off the action that you saw when you listened to my breakdown of this fight. There were some close moments, but you can make an argument for Kyle in some of the rounds, but the draw after the first two made sense to me, and I actually thought it was tactical. I thought that Norrie was trying to keep it close. I thought that Norrie would shut down offense with a clinch here and there, and then he'd fall into it so that Kyle was clinching him. I thought that the refs were doing a good job throughout the whole card of calling the Japanese guys for clinching as well. They don't always do a good job of that. I thought they did a better job here. At the whole card, nobody had a point taken. Well, wait, Pearshev got a point taken from him earlier for holding on to Ren. But other than that, most of the guys were just there competing. They get a hold here and there, but nothing on the scorecards. Anyways, Norrie kept it close with moments, getting into clinch. You could see that at the end of the third round, the low kick works had done its best. But Kyle would just sit on there, his boxing a lot harder. He looked to fill the spots. He just did a good job of just making you forget moments in the fight. And that just takes a savvy veteran guy who knows what they're doing, who's been fighting for a long time. We go to the extra round. The extra round was really, really close with no really deciding moment for either guy until Norrie had scored a series of offense around the 40 seconds left in the round period of time, where he landed some big hands and he kind of went, I think it finished with a clinched knee, but it was the only time there was like a head-snapping moment in the round. They go to the cards. First one went to Kyle, and then the last two very dramatically went to Norrie. Super emotional. And as I mentioned before, the selling themselves part. So not only did Norrie have this video where he's got his new life, because now he's into his, you know, he's still 24 years old, but now he's got, you know, I don't know if it's his wife, but he's got a girl, he's got a baby. Like, they sold that before the fight. So then after he wins the fight, he has this emotional moment where, you know, he's the best in the world, crouch tearing. They bring the baby in. First, the baby was calm, but then after a while, the baby started crying, understandably. But, like, it was just crazy to see. This is the new star. Go ahead and imagine that showing up on newspapers because there used to be a combat sports culture in the 90s. You know, Kakatui used to be hot, and it's not uncommon to watch a K-1 event and see people in the audience holding children. So go ahead and imagine that fan base, whether they, you know, stayed hot, heavy in combat sports or not. Imagine them seeing the paper the next day and they see Misaki Norrie is the champion and he's holding his baby. Like, that kind of stuff is big for selling the athletes. So great job there. Great victory for Norrie. Clearly, Koo fights again, he's going to be favored. You know what I'm saying? If they bring out Kyle again, he's going to be the guy. But Misaki Norrie, who cares if you're able to do it forever? You did it today. You are the best in the world. And, you know, in your weight class, and as predicted here 9 years ago, it's great to watch his emergence. And so my son is now champion, and you guys will just all have to deal with it. It's my podcast. We finished the show up on Chingiz Alzov getting a victory over Yoshihiro Kido. Very entertaining last fight. And if you are a Japanese Kido fan, it couldn't have gone any better for you. Chingiz Alzov gets going right away. He's a better kickboxer, it's clear. Scores it down with the boxing in round one. Round two, he's doing some of the similar stuff. Gets a little bit too fancy with a step knee. Yoshihiro Kido times it, lands a big shot. Alzov goes down. Even though it was a flash knockdown, Alzov was a little on some wobbly legs when he got up. Those legs weren't steady. He was on a little bit of wobbly legs, but he recovered as if nothing happened the moment it was done. But that gave Kido a round that he very much needed. So we had two 10-8 rounds after two. And then we go to the third, and Alzov, I think it was a great job by his corner of them putting the urgency in him, like, hey, you will lose this thing if you do not turn it up. And he went out there, he scores two downs in the final round to ensure that he gets the victory over Kido. Your super welterweight champion, Chingiz Alzov. This is a long time coming. He's 24, 25 years old himself. So we're looking at their champions. We've got Norrie, 24-25. You know, 24 years old for Norrie. 24-25 for Chingiz Alzov. Takuro is 25. Like, they've got young stars. And that's so huge for their sport. It's so huge for K1, for its growth. So when Alzov got this victory, first of all, he's a guy who, you know, this tournament field, there's a lot of them where it'd be fun to see how they'd go against the guys in Glory. Overall, Glory's got the better talent. I'd say top to bottom, they've got better talent at the division. But there are some guys that would, Chingizhao would give a lot of those guys a run for their money. But he's a very, very skilled guy. He put in a performance, and finally, the showcase that he's deserved. Since a long time ago, when he fought on Fight Code, and I remember having my podcast and having Ryan Scalia on it, and having Dave Walsh and us sit down talking about it, and I was like, what did you guys think of him? And I was like, he was good, but he went against a guy that he was way better than. And I remember Scalia was like, you know, I really think this guy's going to be something down the road. In the coming years, the level of opposition and the kinds of wins that he got just kept growing. And they were just, some of them were just all just violent KOs. He is a very, very skilled guy. The kind of guy you want representing the best fighter in the world for your division. And just look at KO in the first round, KO in the second round, and three knockdowns scored in the final. That's how you go through a tournament field. That's how you make people say, hey, this is the guy to watch. He puts people on their backs. Great job by Chingizhao Zov. Great job by K1. Once again, putting on a great card. I watched this till 6:30 in the morning my time. Then I had a rough day getting through my next day. But it was just a great card. I loved it all. Very, very entertaining stuff. So thank you guys all for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. I will be back next week probably. And again, I do want to forgive. My time just hasn't allowed me to get it, you know, to do some of the stadium Muay Thai stuff that I did before. Because I've got to sit down, watch that video, and really break it down intensely. Whereas, you know, sometimes I can get K1 or kickboxing results, or I can get GIFs of, you know, KOs, and I can break them down a little bit faster. So please forgive if you're of the full rules Muay Thai camp. Also, Kuai Lin Jiang got a victory this past weekend, and he's one of the best, you know, fighters in the world. I just got his KO. That's all I got was the GIF of his KO. I didn't even get that full card. So definitely shout out to the people who send me GIFs, the people who post GIFs, the people who post small videos. I will do my best to keep bringing you kickboxing. I'll do my best to keep bringing you Muay Thai. But I just want you all to know that I appreciate you. I love every single person who's, you know, puts time in, listen to my kickboxing podcast, and I hope you enjoy it. God bless and have a good one. Peace.